The Cinema St. Louis 26th Annual St. Louis International Film Festival kicked off last night and will continue through November 12th. It features dozens of feature films, shorts, and documentaries, and a wide variety of subjects. One to be shown this weekend is titled Cop Watch. It strikes very close to home. We'll find out more about that and the festival with our guests. Cliff Fralick is Executive Director of Cinema St. Louis. David Witt is a member of We Cop Watch and is featured in the documentary Cop Watch. He's also been active in Ferguson, and he joins us by phone. Raisa Williams is a postdoctoral fellow in the Performing Arts Department at Washington University. Thank you all so much for being with us. David, are you there?
I'm here. Yes, I am.
Okay, great. We'll get to you in just a second, but I want to start with Cliff. Cliff, give us a quick overview on this year's film festival.
Well, as always, we sprawl over 11 days. We kicked off last night with a sold-out show. We'll be at many venues. There's actually sometimes as many as 10 different theaters that'll be running simultaneously. You can find out everything you need to know. It's a difficult thing to sort of wrap your head around initially, but if you go to the cinemastlouis.org website, you'll be able to get complete information, and it's very sortable, so you can sort of home in on the things that you're most interested in. If you love documentaries, if you like French films, whatever, there's a whole range of ways of sort of navigating. You aptly summarized it as far as the sheer sort of scope of the festival, as far as the different kinds of varieties. Lots of international films, American independent documentaries, and of course, many shorts.
And we'll point out that we'll put a link to your website on our website at stlpublicradio.org to make it easier for people to navigate all of that. One little controversial item that came up just before all of this started was, of course, pulling the film, the Harvey Weinstein film, because of the problems that he has had out in the West Coast with regard to sexual assault and that sort of sexual abuse.
Yeah, we were originally slated to play a film called The Upside, which, of course, had nothing to do with the sort of things that he's accused of. But because it was from the Weinstein Company, we felt it was sort of imperative to address the accusations against him in some fashion. And so we had proposed to the Weinstein Company that we do a panel that dealt with sexual violence and sexual harassment. It was going to be a slightly awkward fit because obviously the film didn't deal with those issues. But nonetheless, we thought it was appropriate. They chose to not play the film here because of that. And so rather than just substitute something arbitrarily, we thought, well, let's actually address that subject. And we already had a great movie called The Light of the Moon that dealt with post-rape trauma and how women have to sort of cope with the after effects of rape. And so we added a third screening of that in the same slot. We're going to still have the panel. Safe Connections and the YWCA will be both participating in that panel that addresses these subjects, and we're going to be devoting the full proceeds to those groups.
Okay. Well, thank you for bringing us up to speed on that. Raisa, let me turn to you with regard to the film Cop Watch. Have you seen the film?
I have.
Right. Tell me about it.
So Cop Watch is a documentary that follows four members of the organization We Cop Watch. And in doing so, there's a way that the film footage of Eric Garner's arrest and murder in Staten Island or Freddie Gray's arrest and murder in Baltimore, Maryland, the footage of it kind of circulates on its own. It takes on a life of its own. But what we forget about are the people who were actually recording those films. And so the documentary Cop Watch is very much about focusing on the people who actually did the filming and the fallout and aftermath that come from doing that work.
That's what We Cop Watch is all about.
Yes.
Is taking video. When they see police encounters with folks, they just start videotaping it,
right?
Correctly?
Right. I mean, a lot of times these are amateur videographers who live in the neighborhoods or who just happen to be in the place where an arrest is happening. And it's the organization We Cop Watch. They film no matter who is being arrested. So if they see an arrest, you film. And one of the things I think that is really important about the organization is that it's not just filming, like, you know, in your house and you don't, and the police, they don't know that you're filming it. It's about being very on the front lines and let the police know, I am filming this. And what is your name? And what is your badge number? And really trying to do this interventionist work on the ground as well as provide documented evidence should something go awry.
Let's turn to David Witt now, who is featured prominently in the film. And David, very, very active in the Ferguson area. What has your experience been with police officers when you're videotaping, David?
Well, in St. Louis, I can only speak about St. Louis right now because that's where we've been doing a lot of our work.
That's what we want to talk about.
Yeah, initially, the police was, you know, very rebellious because, you know, they have, you know, the ACLU came and said that citizens have a right to film. So we were doing just that in Ferguson. And, you know, the cops really wasn't trying to, you know, adhere. And then eventually, you know, it kind of, as we continue to, you know, push the envelope with us filming, then they kind of had got the message that we're not going anywhere. So they just, you know, figured out how to just cope with that.
I've seen the film, and the reaction of the police in many cases was relatively hostile, I would say, and that may be an understatement.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, you know, we have to, in this situation, which is why it doesn't show you in the documentary how much training that we actually, we focus on a lot more education. You know, what do you do after you film something? Because in cases like that with police harassment, you don't want people to think that this is a good opportunity to start, you know, attacking police, verbally abusing them or this and that, adding a third. But you know what I'm saying? Like basically just gather your evidence and present this stuff in a court situation. So we had forced the cops to have to respect us. I'm in the court right now suing the cops. I'd already sued St. Louis for arresting me the day of the non-indictment. So, you know, filming the police stems way much further than, you know, just going out there and filming this. What do you do with this video, you know? So we focus on that a lot in our trainings and stuff, just trying to give people the information that they need. You know, we cop watch focus a lot about the education, not about trying to get people to join our organization or anything like that, because you can, you know what I'm saying, you can start a cop watch in your own neighborhood, because cop watch is really about citizens watching out for other citizens and the police knowing that you're there to do just that.
What are the ground rules for taking these videos?
So there's really no rules in filming. You know, it's very loose, so we just try to give people all the different options. But what we promote and what we try to encourage and teach in our trainings is, one, you know, what to do with this video. So if you had a cop stop and you're filming for somebody else's protection, so what we encourage people that is filming is to try their best to get this video to the victim as opposed to trying to post this stuff on social media first, because you want to help the victim out in this situation. You know, there's a court matter that takes place, and a lot of this stuff is evidence. Once this stuff get released, police probably haven't even filled out the official statement yet. So a lot of this, you know, and people just don't know the procedure as far as legal action goes. So a lot of cops get off. Shout out to Ramsey and Kevin Moore, because, you know, you got two people here that actually filmed police misconduct. They actually murdered friends of theirs. And, you know what I'm saying, the cops had got off. So the big question is, why did these brothers continue to support this act of filming? Because they had recognized, they had realized themselves that there was more that they could have done as a person. And we all have to look within ourselves as what else could we have done, you know, past just filming. You know, Kevin Moore, for example, he went to the police station and he gave them the video. He also went to CNN. Ramsey did the same thing. You know, we just was trying to give them the information that sometimes it's better to preserve this evidence and use it later, and then allow the victim to be able to have access to this before we put it out public or even give the police access to it.
Let me just mention that all of this is pointed out in the film. The people you're referring to are featured in the film. Marisa, let me come back to you. You know, you just can't wander into a crime scene or a potential crime scene and start taking pictures. This is pointed out in the film as well, you really have to kind of keep a certain distance, don't you?
Right. And I mean, David, you know, speaks to that in terms of what is that. Actually, people have a right to be able to film, but within a certain amount of distance. Yeah. But one of the things that gets captured in the film are members of We Cop Watch filming and the police saying, get back, get back. And the members who are filming saying, I'm actually within my rightful bounds, right? But then the police saying, no, go back behind this fence line or go back behind this particular line. Yeah. But it is a matter, too, of if this is to become a crime scene or, like, basically how to, for the organization on their website, wecopwatch.org, it's how do you intervene nonviolently or a nonviolent intervention to observe, right? And so in a way that it's not going to stop what's happening in the arrest or to put your body physically in danger, but as well as to be able to get the correct angles or not the correct angles, but to get the evidence that can be used, right?
Is this going to make a difference, do you think?
You know, I don't know. I think that in some ways it can make a difference if the police know that they are being watched, that maybe they can check the force that they're using, right, on someone. So if you have someone you're arresting and they're on the ground, do you need three other officers to be on top of that person, right? So I think that's a way that can happen. But I also think, too, it's kind of a tricky thing because I think that evidence can also be used against victims as well, right? And so there's a way that just because we collect evidence doesn't mean that it works in our favor, right?
Well, same thing with police and their video cameras and their police cars. Mm-hmm. Most of the time it works in their favor, but sometimes it doesn't. We've seen some of the video that where it's been negative. Cliff, have you seen this film?
I have.
What do you think? It starts off very dramatically, doesn't it, with the videos of these cases that we've talked about.
Right. Very famous cases, now famous, that we're all familiar with. And then as we've talked about, they go behind the scenes to the people who actually did the filming. And they oftentimes become victims themselves as far as putting under intense police scrutiny. In some instances, perhaps appropriately, they have done something wrong, but probably they wouldn't have necessarily fallen into police hands but for the fact that they've given this evidence and then therefore receive a lot more attention than they otherwise would.
David, let me come back to you with regard to the source of your video. I was interested in the film and noticing that you had a GoFundMe campaign that seemed to work pretty well in terms of acquiring cameras.
Yeah, well, in Ferguson, which was very unique, thanks to Jacob Crawford, who actually brought the concept of Copwatch to Ferguson. But what happened was we immediately knew from the early on when the Ferguson thing had kicked off that police was just out of control and nobody, the consciousness just to pull out a camera and film because they was discouraging people from doing that. People got arrested. One of my neighbors had got shot. And so what we knew and what we just figured that we need cameras on the ground. So we started that GoFundMe up like 7 days after Mike was murdered in our neighborhood. And we had raised over $1,000 that one night. This was the night just before the state of emergency was issued because a lot of stuff was going on. And so anyway, so right after we had raised that $1,000, we went and got four cameras. And we gave it to members of the community, you know what I'm saying? And we just created a system, you know what I'm saying, with those cameras. People that wasn't afraid were given the cameras, and people that were afraid, they just kind of hung in the background, you know, and they gave us, you know, and they called each other. So it actually turned out to be a community thing. And cop watching or holding a police accountable, I should say, actually does work when you and a group of people are working together at this, you know, because if a police see you out in the street and you're by yourself and they feel as though that you have no protection, nobody cares, then they will act differently. But once they see a caring community around, and that changes their behavior. And so we're trying to change the behavior because we can't stop police from murdering. If police wake up one morning and they want to use that defense, you know what I'm saying, I was in fear of my life, he's going to shoot someone. But if he's in the caring community, it's not going to get to that point because the community is going to, the cop is going to know that we're going to hold you accountable and we're going to make sure that this stuff is documented. And like the young lady said, some of this stuff, people have to know how to conduct themselves because anything you say and do can and will be used against you in court. So the education of this is very important. I don't mean to drag it out too long.
Time is getting away. Let me very quickly ask you, though, how many people do you have on the ground here in the St. Louis area with cameras?
Well, see, we in 2014, we gave out over 210 body cameras. That was the drive, but we never committed anybody to be a part of our organization. We just gave people this information, gave them the tools so they can do with it what they please, you know, because at that time they were trying to they were trying to target people doing this, and we did not want to have no trail of listing names of people that's involved, so we allow people to get this information, and that made people feel more comfortable. So
I get it. Again, time is getting away. Let me come back to Risa here. This almost seems like a movement. I mean, we only have 30 seconds left, but people are wearing shirts. It's almost like they're in uniform, and there are a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Is it a movement?
You know...
Very quickly, please.
I'm going to say, yes, it's a movement, but I say that hesitantly because this is like the distrust of the police is something that has happened long before Ferguson sure. or Black Lives Matter, right? Because of this long history, these things did not happen in a vacuum.
Right.
So, and a lot of, and just really quickly, in the documentary, in the documentary, I think one of the great things that happens or we learn is how the members were.
Let's refer people to the documentary.
I'm sorry.
Thank you very much, Risa Williams. Cliff Freilich, thank you for being with us. David Witt, you too. Thank you for being with us.
Okay, now, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Right.